continuing, quote from anti-systemic movements, and officially classified debtor states are required on pain of losing their credibility as states and hence of losing, in today's world, their very stateness. They're required to reduce the cost of their exports by reducing the costs to capital, direct and indirect, of labor within their borders. Popular demonstrations against such officially constructed austerity plans are reported almost daily. This world-level organized pressure to depress the living conditions of the world's more and less proletarianized workers is hard to construe as other than a strategic escalation by capital of class struggle. It is, however, an escalation, a new scale, that is not all that easy to analyze. It occurs via rather original mechanisms concerning an area of class struggle that is poorly understood theoretically, namely the complex lines delimiting the spheres of necessary labor, relative surplus value, and levels of livelihood, or normatively, standards of well-being. And it is a sort of pressure, particularly given the complexity of the relational mediations that divides peoples into overlapping rather than polarizing groupings. Whether then the groupings that in fact form as the pressure, austerity, deepens and spreads, will reinforce or weaken the elemental class-forming process is still to be determined. And my interjection, picture a flood, a great wave, and this is not the wave of our determination, to say the least. A great wave that is engulfing us. We see not the cause, but all are being lapped up similarly, set down in our given tasks similarly. It's the panopticon made global by means of the concentration and deployment of our own global energy. They siphon off our force by means of the mega corporations, weakening us by stealing our means of survival. Concentrated means force, to force our agreement, quote unquote, our agreement to accept our assignments. And this is what they're talking about in this Marxist terminology of necessary labor, relative surplus value, levels of livelihood, that we are given our tasks, and that these are layered tasks with different levels of well-being associated with them. Our agreement forced to accept these assignments. And for some, this means laboring in the fields and factories. For others, in the sanitized spaces of the so-called privilege. And recall, the panopticon means we are isolated from each other, intentionally so. We don't know about each other's lives. So they are right to ask us to think about, what does this mean for our being able to unify, for our unity? And then they are right later on to ask, what does world scale, worldwide electronification, how does that play into all this? What effect does that have? So some in fields and factories, others in sanitized spaces designed to make them feel better than creatives, better than their brothers and sisters, and all of us subjected to a strict regime of no access to information about each other, our peaceful hearts and our true wishes, our longing for self-determined communalism. I reread their words and pondered them, and I asked, isn't this in essence But the same class-age-old strategy expressed, for instance, very clearly in Xenophon's Economicus, thousands of years ago, of intentionally stratifying us such that we stay in mutual competition and straining up, that ladder always being pulled beneath our feet as we pretend we're advancing in such confusion that it never occurs to us to discuss who sets the whole thing up. I think we're at the point where we can, with greater assurance, reject the convolutedness of economic theory of whatever persuasion and challenge our Marxist brethren to consider that to the degree that Marxist theory is an economic theory, it harms rather than helps our chances of uniting globally such that the interstate system as the means for power to escalate its war on us can be responsibly dismantled or reimagined as a dissolution of rigid institutions.